Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
We need concrete action now. We need a humanitarian ceasefire now. We need unimpeded delivery of humanitarian assistance now.
As calls grow across the globe for a ceasefire in Gaza, we look at the unprecedented toll Israel's bombardment has taken on journalists. More than 50 journalists, almost all Palestinian, have been killed since October 7th. We'll speak to the Committee to Protect Journalists. Then the acclaimed Palestinian poet, Masaba Boutouha, has been detained at an Israeli checkpoint in Gaza, his whereabouts unknown. He spoke to Democracy Now! Last month.
So where do we go? And Netanyahu, on the second day of the escalation, said, ask the Palestinians in Gaza to leave. He said, leave now. But where do we leave and why should we leave? We have nowhere else to go.
We'll also speak to Vermont's only Congress member, Democrat Becca Ballant, who's become the first Jewish member of Congress to call for a ceasefire in Gaza. Then to Argentina, where the far-right political outsider, Javier Milei, has been elected president. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Palestinian Health Ministry says all hospitals in northern Gaza are now out of service amidst repeated assaults by Israeli forces on medical centers. The World Health Organization said it was working to evacuate remaining patients from Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in the besieged Palestinian territory, along with the Indonesian and Al-Ahli hospitals. Hundreds of patients, many of them injured in Israeli strikes, remain trapped in medical centers which have effectively ceased functioning. A WHO official in Geneva said Israel's assault is, quote, robbing the entire population of the north of the means to seek health care, unquote. There's been no let-up in Israel's bombing campaign. In one of the latest attacks, at least 20 Palestinians were killed when Israeli forces bombed the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. Palestinian officials say more than 13,300 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli strikes, over 5,000 of them children. On Monday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres marked World Children's Day, the UN's annual Day of Action for Children, with a call to stop the carnage.
What is clear is that we have had, in a few weeks, thousands of children killed. So this is what matters. We are witnessing a killing of civilians that is unparalleled and unprecedented in any conflict since I am Secretary General.
The chairman of the Gaza Press House has been killed by Israel's military. Bilal Jadala was heading to the south of the Gaza Strip when he was killed by an Israeli tank shell in the Zeitoun neighborhood of Gaza City. Bilal Jadala was known as the godfather of Palestinian journalism. He helped train generations of reporters and welcome foreign correspondents to the Gaza Strip. In northern Gaza, 27-year-old digital content and podcast presenter Ayat Qadoura has reportedly been killed along with her family in an Israeli airstrike. This is one of her last video reports.
We're separated, of course. I and a few others remain at home while the rest have evacuated, and we don't know where they went. The situation is very scary. The situation is very terrifying. What is happening is very difficult. May God have mercy on us.
In southern Lebanon, two journalists with the Beirut-based TV channel El Mayadeen have been killed in an Israeli airstrike. The network says camera operator Rabi Al-Mamati and correspondent Farah Omar were deliberately targeted by an Israeli warplane after reporting on the latest Israeli bombardment of South Lebanon. A third civilian traveling with them was also killed in the attack. At least 50 journalists and media workers, most of them Palestinian, have been killed in the region since October 7th. We'll have more on this story after headlines. The Palestinian poet and author Mosaba Boutoha has been arrested by Israeli soldiers while trying to leave the Gaza Strip with his family. Boutoha had been heading to the southern Rafah boarding crossing when he was abducted at an Israeli military checkpoint on November 18th. His family has not heard from him since. Mosaba Boutoha is an author, a columnist, a teacher, and founder of the Edward Said Library in Gaza. To see our recent interview with him, visit our website at democracynow.org. We'll have more on his disappearance later in the broadcast. In Jerusalem, far-right members of Israel's parliament Monday got into a shouting match with family members of hostages being held by Hamas in Gaza. Lawmakers were debating a bill to impose the death penalty on, quote, terrorists. The bill was advanced by Israel's ultra-nationalist national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, who was convicted of racist incitement against Palestinians and supporting a terrorist group, convicted in an Israeli court. Family members condemned the death penalty bill, saying it endangered efforts to win the release of their abducted relatives. This is Udi Koren, whose cousin is being held captive in Gaza.
This is incredibly disappointing because I feel that at this point, when we know that taking down Hamas, we keep hearing from them, is going to take months or years, and it's going to take a long time. On the other hand, the other objective is time sensitive. People are dying. We know that for sure.
One hostage family member yelled at Ben-Gvir in the Knesset session, you care more about killing Arabs than saving Jewish lives. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera reports Qatar brokered talks for a deal that would see Hamas release some of its hostages in exchange for a 3 to 5 day pause in fighting are at a critical and final stage. Hamas officials said they were, quote, close to reaching a truce agreement. The White House has pushed back after the Center for Constitutional Rights sued President Biden, accusing him of failing to prevent genocide in the Gaza Strip. On Monday, White House spokesperson John Kirby called the allegations, quote, pretty inappropriate. He said only Hamas has genocidal intentions, not Israel's government.
Yes, there are too many civilian casualties in Gaza. Yes, the numbers are too high. Yes, too many families are grieving. And yes, we continue to urge the Israelis to be as careful and cautious as possible. That's not going to stop from the president right on down. But Israel is not trying to wipe the Palestinian people off the map. Israel's not trying to wipe Gaza off the map. Israel's trying to defend itself against a genocidal terrorist threat.
Those remarks from the White House came as Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon became just the second senator to demand a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, joining Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin. Merkley wrote, quote, by waging a war that generates a shocking level of civilian carnage rather than a targeted campaign against Hamas, Israel's burning through its reserves of international support. Too many civilians and too many children have died, and we must value each and every child equally, whether they are Israeli or Palestinian, Merkley wrote. In Seattle, hundreds of people blocked the main entrance to the Space Needle Observation Tower Sunday in a Jewish-led peaceful act of civil disobedience calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Protesters flew a 40-foot-tall banner that read, cease fire now, on the air, buoyed by large balloons. They're demanding Washington Senators Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell, both Democrats, join growing congressional calls for a ceasefire. The action was organized by the Seattle chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace. A federal appeals panel has blocked individuals and civil rights groups such as the NAACP from suing to enforce the Voting Rights Act, granting that authority solely to the U.S. government. Voting rights advocates warn Monday's 2-1 decision by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals could further erode the landmark 1965 law, weakening provisions that protect Black and other voters of color from racial discrimination. The majority decision was written by Judge David Strass, who was appointed by Donald Trump. The ruling stems from a gerrymandering case in Arkansas in which the state chapter of the NAACP accused Arkansas of restricting voting access to Black citizens. Sophia Lynn Lacken, director of the ACLU's Voting Rights Project, who argued the case, slammed the decision as a travesty for democracy, saying the ruling, quote, has put the Voting Rights Act in jeopardy, tossing aside critical protections that voters fought and died for, she said. The ruling's expected to be challenged and could head to the U.S. Supreme Court. In Ohio, four people were injured and left hospitalized Monday evening after a man walked into a Walmart in the city of Beaver Creek and opened fire with an assault rifle. Police say the shooter then died of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. It's the same Walmart store where, in 2014, a 22-year-old African-American man named John Crawford III was shot and killed by a police officer after a caller phoned 911 to accuse him of brandishing a gun and pointing at other customers. In fact, Crawford had picked up an unloaded BB air rifle on a shelf. The white police officer who fatally shot John Crawford was acquitted by an Ohio grand jury. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been over 600 mass shootings across the United States so far this year, a record pace. In Sweden, labor unions are continuing their blockade against Tesla in response to Elon Musk's electric car manufacturer's refusal to sign a collective bargaining agreement for higher wages and better working conditions with its mechanics. Dock workers at dozens of Swedish ports have refused to unload Tesla cars from ships. Meanwhile, electricians stopped repair work at Tesla's charging stations. Swedish postal workers have also joined the strike, halting the delivery and collection of mail at all Tesla sites in Sweden. The strike began in late October, impacting at least 12 Tesla service centers in Sweden. This comes as the United Auto Workers Union looks to organize Tesla plants here in the United States following their successful strike against the big three U.S. automakers. And in Nairobi, Kenya, delegates from several fossil fuel producing countries backed by a network of plastics industry trade groups have stalled talks on a global treaty to curb plastic waste. Representatives from around 150 countries to the UN brokered talks failed to reach an agreement after countries including Saudi Arabia and Russia pushed for more plastic recycling rather than limits to plastic production. This is Graham Forbes, head of Greenpeace's delegation in Nairobi.
The reality is that we've only recycled about 9% of the plastic that's ever been produced. We cannot recycle our way out of this problem. And so what Greenpeace is calling for is cutting plastic production and accelerating a reuse-based economy. We expect the negotiations to finance, create standards, and accelerate reuse at a global scale.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
It's been another devastating 24 hours in Gaza and southern Lebanon for journalists covering the 46-day Israeli bombardment. The Beirut-based TV channel El Mayadeen has just announced two of its journalists were killed today in an Israeli airstrike in southern Lebanon. The network says correspondent Farah Omar and camera operator Rabi Al-Mamadi were deliberately targeted by an Israeli warplane after reporting on Israel's latest bombardment of South Lebanon. Meanwhile, in northern Gaza, Ayat Khadoura, a 27-year-old digital content and podcast presenter, has been reportedly killed along with her family in an Israeli airstrike. This is Ayat, one of her last video reports.
This may be the last video for me.
Today, the occupation dropped phosphorus bombs on the Beit Lahia project area and scary sound bombs and threw evacuation notices in the area. And of course, almost the entire area has evacuated. Everyone started running madly in the streets. No one knows neither where they're going to or coming from. We're separated, of course. I and a few others remain at home while the rest have evacuated, and we don't know where they went. The situation is very scary. The situation is very terrifying. What is happening is very difficult. May God have mercy on us.
On Sunday, the head of the Gaza press house was also killed by the Israeli military. Bilal Jadala was heading to southern Gaza when he was killed by an Israeli tank shell in the Zaytun neighborhood of Gaza City. Bilal was known as the godfather of Palestinian journalism. He helped train generations of reporters and welcome foreign correspondents and sponsored them when covering the Gaza Strip. The Committee to Protect Journalists Monday announced a grim milestone had been reached with at least 50 journalists and media workers killed since October 7th. 45 of the journalists have been Palestinian. There have been 3 Israeli journalists killed, and there have been at least 3 Lebanese journalists killed. CPJ reports 11 journalists have been injured, 3 are reported missing, and 18 have been arrested. According to CPJ, the past month and a half has been the deadliest period of journalists covering the conflict since the media group began tracking these deaths over 30 years ago. We go now to Philadelphia, where we're joined by Sharif Mansour, the Middle East and North Africa program coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. Sharif, welcome back to Democracy Now! Under horrific circumstances. The UN Secretary General says that the number of civilian deaths is unparalleled and unprecedented. Of course, journalists are civilians. As I woke up this morning, I got one text after another. First, the young woman and her cameraman in southern Lebanon killed about an hour after she posted a video report. She's standing in a field in southern Lebanon, and she's talking about the Israeli military killing civilians. She and her cameraman are then hit and killed. And then, as I'm learning their names, another text comes in. This young reporter in northern Gaza is killed. Even as she says in her report, "I fear I will die." Can you talk about this latest news? And then a man you have come to know who worked with you on a CPJ report, the head of the Gaza Journalists Association, also killed in an airstrike.
Thank you, Amy, for having me. I remember being on your show a little bit more of a month ago and saying for journalists in the region, this is the deadly time. And it was the deadliest week back then. It became the deadliest month, and now the deadliest 6 weeks on our record. I was not exaggerating. I was not speculating. The killing of Bilal Jadala, who helped us document this deadly pattern of journalists being killed by Israeli fire over 21 years. Just in May, we made a profile of 20 journalists. Majority, 18, were Palestinians. And he, Jadala, his center, have helped identify them, their families, get us their pictures. And on Sunday, he became a victim of this same deadly pattern when he was killed in his car. Jadala have also provided crucial safety equipment for journalists in order to do their job safely. And he opened the press house for journalists to use electricity and internet when there was no other place. This deadly pattern has existed before. It's getting more deadly per day. We are investigating the 3 more killing today, adding to 50 as of yesterday. We've never seen anything like this. It's unprecedented. And for journalists in Gaza specifically, the exponential risk is probably the most dangerous we have seen. journalists were killed in the very early stages at the two entry and exit points from Gaza. In the south, the Rafah crossing. In the north, the Erez crossing. And since then, they were killed everywhere in between. They were killed in the south, in Rafah city, in Khan Yunis, where they were told it's going to be safe. They were killed in the middle, in the Gaza Strip, and they were killed in the north, in Gaza city. They have no safe haven. They have no exit.
Sharif, could you talk as well about the arrests of journalists in Gaza and the occupied territories? And also, your organization has criticized as well Israel for its censorship within Israel of the press in Israel. Could you talk about that as well?
We have documented separately from the casualties list, which includes journalists going missing, injured, the escalation of arrests. As of yesterday, 18 Palestinian journalists from the West Bank were arrested. Many of them were put in administrative detention and military prosecutions. In addition, dozens of cases of censorship, direct censorship, cyber attacks, physical assaults, obstruction from coverage within the West Bank and within Israel. In Israel, an emergency legislation has now given the government for the first time the unprecedented power of shutting down international media organizations, including acting on Al-Miadeen, which two of journalists were killed today in Lebanon, banning them in Israel, and allowing the government also to jail even Israeli journalists for up to a year under suspicious and these accusations of harming national morale and harming national security.
Also, here in the United States, we are getting much coverage on the commercial media of the war, of the Israeli war in Gaza. But it's all of U.S. journalists that are basically based in Israel. And there are no U.S. journalists that I've seen that are actually in Gaza. And those who do go in only go in with the Israeli army and under the condition that Israel must review all of their videotape beforehand and approve it before it can go out. I'm wondering your sense of how the American people, what kind of story they're getting as a result of these conditions.
Well, these conditions put local Palestinian photojournalists and freelancers at the most risk. They are the ones on the front lines. We have seen a dwindling number of international media and international journalists within Gaza over the years because of the risks involved. And right now, the Palestinian journalists are bearing the brunt of this risk and this heavy toll. Of course, these casualties, the censorship, is also coupled with communication blackouts for to date since the start of the war that makes this more of a news blackout, not just communication blackout. And of course, that denies journalists a voice. It also denies people in the region and worldwide of essential media coverage, life-saving information for 2 million Palestinians who are struggling to find food, clean water, and shelter right now, but millions and hundreds of millions all over the world who are following this heartbreaking conflict and try to understand it, including in the U.S.
So as Juan said, Sharif, you have the Israeli military says they cannot guarantee the lives of journalists that go into Gaza. In early November, I'm just thinking back to a few weeks ago, the Palestine News Agency reported that their journalist, Mohammed Abu Hattab, was killed in an Israeli strike on his home in southern Gaza Strip, along with 11 members of his family, including his wife, son, and brother. His colleague, journalist Salman al-Bashir, burst into tears during a live broadcast upon learning of Abu Hattab's killing. As he spoke, al-Bashir tore off his helmet and protective vest labeled press and threw them to the ground. And then there was a split screen as he ripped off his gear, saying, why do we bother wearing this if we're going to be killed anyway? They showed the anchor back in the Palestine News studio as she wept as al-Bashir tore off his helmet and protective vest. Your response to this situation and this whole issue of embedded journalism is the only way the U.S. media can get those reports inside Gaza, where their news reports are reviewed, and the Gazan journalists on the ground being killed one after another, dozens of Palestinian journalists killed.
Well, the Israeli army cannot escape or evade their responsibility under international law not to use unwarranted lethal force against journalists and against media facilities. It would constitute a possible war crime to do so. We have raised directly with Israeli officials the need for them to reform the rules of engagement, to respect press insignia, and to ensure there are safeguards, checks, when civilians and journalists are around. We have called for Israeli allies, including the U.S. government, European allies, to raise directly these issues and publicly with their Israeli counterparts. And we have called for the UN Security Council to include safety of journalists on the agenda in any diplomatic discussion. Of course, the Israeli government are obliged under international law to protect journalists and civilians, but it's also journalists' vital role in time of war, providing accurate, timely, independent information that gives them these protections under international law. And we want to make sure that the Israeli army as well do not continue to push false narratives and smear campaigns to try and justify the killing of those journalists.
Sharif Mansour, we want to thank you for being with us, Middle East and North Africa Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists, speaking to us from Philadelphia. Coming up, the acclaimed Palestinian poet Masab Abu Toha has been detained at an Israeli checkpoint in Gaza, his whereabouts now unknown. Back in 20 seconds.
I was in the studio, chopping up samples. Electricity's off, we sleep with the candles. Sleep with our sandals, and leave the doors open. Because when bombs drop, there's no time to grab the handles. Write our names on our hands, just to identify. When somebody's face is off, it makes them hard to recognize. Been through so many wars, I forgot to mention. I can calculate the distance of the airplane engine. You think you're from the trenches, not ease the trenches. Cause close the eyes and cover the ears, they block the senses. This war is senseless, they treat us like animals.
Let It Rain by the young Gazan rapper MC Abdul. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Calls are growing across the globe for Israel to immediately release the acclaimed Palestinian poet and author Masab Abu Toha, who was detained at an Israeli military checkpoint in Gaza this weekend while heading toward the Rafah border crossing with his family. His whereabouts are unknown. His work has appeared in The New Yorker, The Atlantic, The Progressive, and other publications. He founded the Edward Said Library in Gaza. His first book of poetry, Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, won the American Book Award and was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award. The poetry collection was published by City Lights Books. In a recent essay in The New Yorker magazine, Abu Toha wrote, I sit in my temporary house in the Jabalia camp waiting for a ceasefire. I feel like I'm in a cage. I'm being killed every day with my people. The only two things I can do are panic and breathe. There is no hope here, he wrote. Masab Abu Toha appeared on Democracy Now! A few weeks ago.
I mean, where do we immigrate? We have been, we were born on this land. My parents were born on this land. My grandparents were born on this land. My great grandparents were born here. But if you ask anyone in Israel, most of them would tell you that their grandparents were born somewhere else. And even I only have a Palestinian passport, which is really not very helpful when I leave Gaza. If I could leave Gaza, so where do we go? And Netanyahu, on the second day of the escalation, said, ask the Palestinians in Gaza to leave. He said, leave now. But where do we leave? And why should we leave? We have nowhere else to go.
Those the words of the Palestinian poet Mossab Abu Toha on Democracy Now! In October. His whereabouts are now unknown after he was taken by Israeli forces at a checkpoint in Gaza. We're joined now by Diana Butu. She is a Palestinian lawyer, former advisor to the negotiating team of the Palestine Liberation Organization, broke the news of Mossab Abu Toha's kidnapping. She joins us now from Haifa. Diana, can you talk about what you understand has happened to him?
Mossab's story is like that of so many Palestinians in Gaza. He was seeking refuge in the Jabalia refugee camp. His own home was bombed, and